Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare, where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. That's imagine.dh.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Debtors' prison. The term evokes gloomy images of Charles Dickens' London, but according to a new report, a modern version exists in the Granite State. The report by the New Hampshire ACLU says poor people are too often incarcerated when they're unable to pay court fines, a practice the group says is unconstitutional and cruel. The ACLU released its analysis last week, and already the court system is responding. While judicial leaders say they doubt the practice is as systematic as the ACLU says it is, they also say they take these charges seriously, and even one person wrongfully placed behind bars is one too many. Today in The Exchange, the role of money in incarceration. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Joining us by phone, Richard Crate, past president of the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police and current chief in Enfield. He's been with law enforcement for more than two decades. And Chief Crate, welcome back. Good to have you.
Good morning.
And also with us, Judge Edwin Kelly, administrative judge for New Hampshire's circuit court system. And Judge Kelly, thank you also very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Laura.
And also with us, Buzz Scher, a professor at UNH Law and co-author of that ACLU report that I mentioned. And Buzz, welcome back. Good to see you.
Pleasure to be here again.
So, Buzz, it's your report. So we'll start with you. What was the most surprising thing for you doing this work?
That it happened. We had heard anecdotally that there was a judge or two that regularly engaged in this practice, and we didn't want to really bring this up until we really had a sense of the dimension of it. So we spent about a year and a half gathering statistics. We got the list of all those who were jailed in lieu of paying fines from 9 out of the 10 county jails in New Hampshire. We then looked at that group of 289 cases and decided to do a statistical study. We sampled randomly about 40 of them, 39 of them, and found that in 20 of those 39 cases involving 9 different judges and 10 different circuit courts, people were being jailed without being having an ability to pay hearing, without it being determined where they could pay the fine and were refusing to do so, or that they just didn't have the money. And they were being jailed without a lawyer present for that hearing. So I think the most surprising thing to me is that we hadn't appreciated that it was not just a rogue judge or a rogue circuit court. By the same token, it's not every judge in New Hampshire. I've talked to judges that frown on this practice, but we thought it substantial enough to do the report and bring it to the attention of the court system.
Well, there's a lot to dig into, including ability to pay, how you determine that, alternatives to paying fines like community service. But when you say this practice, Buzz, just be real specific. What do you mean?
We found in our random sample, 20 of those 39 cases, a person who had had trouble paying their fine, who was called in for a review of their fine, a judge would say, pay today, most frequently a version of pay today or go to jail.
And what kind of fines are we talking about? Traffic tickets?
Anywhere
what?
From $100 fines to, you know, $1,400, $1,500 fines. The majority of them were Class A misdemeanors. That is, misdemeanors for which you could go to jail, potentially, if you're convicted of them. But every so often, we ran into, I think in three examples, the jailing for failure to pay the fine involved a violation, which is not a crime. That is, you can't go to jail if you're convicted of it.
And I want to definitely get to Judge Kelly and Chief Crate, but just to give us a little more clarity, Buzz, what types of crimes? I mean, drunk driving?
Everything.
That's a pretty serious offense.
It ran the gamut of misdemeanors. Circuit Court is the primary court in which misdemeanors are handled in New Hampshire, both ones where you can go to jail, ones you can't go to jail. And we saw the gamut of crimes. Everything from a violation to a DWI to a simple assault to a minor theft to shoplifting. It really was – there was no sense that the jailing for failure to pay the fine had any relation to the seriousness of the offense. I don't think – and correctly, judges weren't really paying attention to the seriousness of the offense because that's irrelevant to whether you've paid your fine or not.
Okay. So, Judge Kelly, I know you had some thoughts about this report. Go ahead.
I think first and foremost, and you said it in your opening, Laura, is that we are, and I am in certain that complete agreement with the report in the premise that it sets out, which is that nobody should go to jail for nonpayment of a fine when the reason for nonpayment is an inability to pay. So we're in complete agreement about that. In fact, Buzz and Gilles Bissonnette and I have already met on Friday to talk about that agreement and where we can go from here. My disagreement with the report really centers on whether it is a systemic problem, and I do not believe it is. And very quickly, the principal reason is it's important to put it into context. In the same year that these cases were reviewed by Buzz and Gilles, the circuit court handled 83,000 criminal cases, that is, cases that have a fine as their typical sentence. So out of those 83,000 cases where theoretically people could have been jailed for nonpayment of fine, only 289 were actually jailed. And of those, maybe half, I think the report says, may have gone to jail without either a significant hearing or without representation by counsel. It's a very small number of cases. And I don't minimize the impact of that on any of those people at all. But just to put it into context, it's something that the issue of jailing somebody, the deprivation of liberty, is something that's on the forefront of every judge's mind and something that we consider to be very important.
So you're saying it's not nearly as systemic as the report makes it out to be, still something that is worth looking at.
Well, I agree that no person should. There, if there's one person that goes to jail without all of the proper constitutional protections, it shouldn't be happening. And so that's why we're concerned.
So how do you as a judge, Judge Kelly, or the judges who work under you, how do they make that decision? You know, let's say I come before you and, you know, it's the fourth or fifth time I've gotten into trouble and I haven't paid my fines and you suspect that I might be able to, but I'm being difficult on that score. How do you make that decision that, you know, Laura, I've had enough, you're going in?
It's almost an organic sort of conversation that you have in the courtroom. Of course, we ask people to fill out financial affidavits and take a close look at those. Many times people will just fill out all zeros. And so it ends up being a conversation the judge has with the individual about their circumstances. Are you working? If you're not working, when was the last time? How many people do you support? How do you survive if you have all zeros on your financial affidavit? And you're trying to make a judgment whether this person has the ability at that moment to pay the whole fine or some part of it. And honestly, it's being done in a courtroom in all of our courts that are very, very busy. And so it's a very quick conversation. So you form that judgment and then you do your best to come up with an alternative.
And I want to bring you into this too, Chief Crate. I mean, there are police right on the front lines. What role do police play in this sort of decision-making process about, you know, whether to arrest someone, bring them in, maybe they have to pay a fine and they can't pay it?
Well, I think the first thing is that, you know, we have discretion in many things, and we have to balance that out to, you know, ensuring that we treat everybody the same so that, you know, the criminal justice system is the same whether you have a lot of money or don't have any money. And at the same time, we have to look at the individual, because why one person may commit a crime may be much different than why the other person did. And the consequences of those, taking all of that into account, is how I think we best determine, the consequences and what action we take.
Give us a little bit more on that, Chief Crate, the idea that the criminal justice system is the same no matter how much money you may or may not have. On the other hand, you are, charged with keeping the peace.
Well, I think ultimately, as I've said before, when we look at the efficiency as far as cost effective, one of the comments in the report is that we spend twice as much to incarcerate somebody as what the fines are. And the criminal justice system is not cost efficient, unfortunately. So, we may have somebody who commits a very minor offense of theft, for instance, shoplifting or something along those lines. And the amount of money that's spent, dealing with that is huge. Probably four or five times what the actual loss is, to the victim. But we have to look at the individual and say, okay, why did this person do that? And those are situations that we look at right away. In determining, the charges that we file against this person, and then what the prosecutor may make for a recommendation if they plead guilty, or to the court upon being convicted of the crime. And I think I think our courts do a good job looking at, all of those, and we're doing a better job. We're actually looking at evidence-based programs. We have our drug courts in the majority of the counties now, where we still have a few that don't have them. So we're looking at that part. And then we're also looking at mental health situations. But again, we do have those cases where, the people just, they run all to zero. And I think the judges, have seen these people in court before, or they look at, other alternatives that the person has available to them to sort of deal with it, community service and such.
We'll definitely talk about community service in a little bit. When you say all the zeros, Chief Crate, you're referring to what Judge Kelly referred to, which is somebody who says, look, I have absolutely no money.
Correct. The financial affidavit, yet they're in there on a drug charge or something along those lines where, they received the marijuana or whatever other drug they may be using. They were able to pay for that, but they're not able to pay their fine.
I want to remind everybody that you can join us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Today, the exchange, we're digging into a new ACLU report that says too many Granite Staters go to jail because they can't afford to pay court fines. We're looking more into that, how this system works, whether it should change, who can pay, who can't. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. If you have questions, comments, personal experiences with this issue, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. And Buzzshaw, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, 2 points, I think. One, let's make it clear what we're focusing on. We're focusing on all those people who are having trouble paying their fines. Some of them may have been in the system before. Some of them may not. But in terms of determining what to do with someone who's struggling to pay their fine, it doesn't matter whether the judge thinks has seen them 20 times before. It doesn't matter whether this is the first time in front of the judge. It doesn't matter whether they're characterized in loose terms as a bad person or just a person who made one mistake. That's irrelevant to the simple, clear issue of can they pay the fine or can't they pay the fine? If they have an ability to pay the fine, as evidenced by a substantial hearing, then, and they're willfully refusing to pay the fine, then they can be jailed. If they have an inability to pay the fine, then they can't be jailed constitutionally. And in both those circumstances, we need to have that hearing, and a lawyer's got to be there as that process is playing out if one result of that hearing will be jail. So our fundamental complaint in our report is those hearings where jail is on the table and it's being determined where there's ability to pay or not an ability to pay are too frequently not occurring.
With a lawyer present.
With a lawyer present or without a lawyer present. We have several transcripts where the judge says, can you pay your fine today? If not, you're going to jail. The person says, I can't pay your fine today, and off the person goes to jail. And that happens in less than 2 minutes. So what needs to happen, and I think Judge Kelly laid it out, there needs to be a process to determine up front who can pay and who can't pay, regardless of who they are, how long they've been in the system.
Well, it sounds like that process would take more time, resources than maybe the courts have right now, Judge Kelly. I mean, courts have faced a lot of cutbacks in recent years.
Well, and I don't want to rely upon that at all, because the fact of the matter is, and that could be an entirely separate show, the fact of the matter is the judicial branch headed by Chief Justice Atlantis has worked very closely with the legislature over at least the last three biennial budgets, and we're satisfied basically with the level of staffing that we do have. But the point that you make, the numbers of people coming through the door, 83,000 people in criminal cases, that for us to be able to give a 15 or 20 minute hearing in each case where there's a fine imposed is something that we probably could not do, almost definitely couldn't do, and it wouldn't make any sense. And in most cases, candidly, in most of those cases, the individual agrees that they're going to pay something at a periodic payment basis, and the court understands the circumstances they're in. The cases that Buzz and the report are talking about are absolutely more complicated cases.
And just to follow up on that, there's probably 150 to 200 cases in the system a year where people are having trouble paying their fines, and it's those cases that is the concern. There's 32 circuit courts around the state. You know, obviously it won't fall out this way, but if you think in those terms, and there's 150 of these cases that are very problematic, you know, that's really, over the course of a year, that's 5 cases a court. Understanding geographically won't play out that way, but 5 cases to have these significant hearings that haven't been occurring, to have a lawyer there, even if it gets to that. That's not a big administrative burden, right. And I don't think the court believes it would be either.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, if we're talking about that number of cases, that's not an issue for us.
Let's take some calls. Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join us as we talk about the role of money in incarceration, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. And Judge Kelly, Chief Crate, Buzz Scher, let's go to our listeners. Lisa's in Manchester. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. My question is, what's the impact on taxpayers when these individuals go into prison that we're paying that? So what's the impact versus something like, community service?
So what's more efficient or a better use of taxpayer resources, Buzz Scher?
Currently, there's a statute that says if someone is jailed for failure to in lieu of paying a fine, they serve the fine off at the rate of $50 a day. It costs there's a Dartmouth study that establishes that it costs in New Hampshire about $110 a day to house an inmate. That means there's a $500 fine where someone would spend 10 days in jail, it's costing the county jail system and the county commissioners $1,100, and the $500 is never collected.
Well, although Chief Crate, you said earlier that the criminal justice system is not about saving money, it's about criminal justice. Go ahead.
That's correct. I mean, when you look at those figures, I think that it obviously gets everybody's attention, but we can't base everything on that, because it's then we're not going to be investigating the crimes. As I've said many times, we have some agencies in the state that, when somebody writes a bad check, if it's under a certain amount, they won't even investigate that as a crime. And, so the person gets away with it. We would definitely have, those type of things take place if we started pushing it out to, what level rises to before we put our resources towards this. That said, I think we're looking at evidence-based programs so that we can do more, with less.
as you said earlier, and drug courts and mental health courts. And we will follow up after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're digging into a new ACLU report that says too many poor Granite Staters go to jail because they can't pay court fines, which the group says is unconstitutional. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chief Crate, I did want to let you finish up that point that you were making just before the break. You were talking about the idea that this isn't about, you know, saving the most money. Go ahead.
Right. As I said earlier, we do have to look at our tax dollars and how we utilize those. And some of these evidence-based programs that we're implementing not only do that, but they also, I think, have a better outcome. But we can't just base it on how much money it costs to put somebody in or not. And I think the courts, as I said before, do a good job in looking at when they make that determination of somebody being incarcerated,
so
understanding you know, all the impact, not just, you know, on the criminal justice system and our tax dollars, but what that does to the individual. There are many times where I think, you know, putting somebody in jail for a very short period of time can turn that behavior that got them into the criminal justice system around quickly and save a lot of money. And most importantly, has a positive effect on that person's lives, so that they decide this is not the path I want to go and change it. But you also have to understand that the studies show that by doing that, by jumping too quick and taking that approach, can have a negative effect.
Well, so
individual.
You really have to make that judgment about a person, Chief Craig.
Well, I think everybody does. I think, you know, the court does, you know, the police, the prosecutor, the defense attorneys. I think everybody has to look at all of those. And while, you know, I share the concern that we can't just arbitrarily incarcerate somebody because they don't have the ability to pay. And I think that the law is very clear that they do need to have representation. We do need to understand that there's a lot of really good things that are happening in our courts. But again, we're being pressed for time and tight budget, and how to make the best use of that.
And I want to bring our other guests in too, Chief Crate, but I'm intrigued by you're using the word turnaround. So you've seen people, you know, of course nobody wants to go to jail, but you've actually seen it as a turnaround moment for some folks.
Absolutely. I think we all have that have been involved in the criminal justice system where we have somebody that gets involved, and the approach that the officers take, the judge takes, you know, the whole system, when it works correctly, really changes lives, changes those behaviors. You know, I was prosecuting many years ago and sitting across from, you know, from defendants, you know, when they're there and they're sitting before the judge, standing before the judge, they want to do, I think the vast majority want to do what will keep them out of trouble, keep them out of jail. They want to change their lives around. The unfortunate part is that we're up against so many different things, and we're learning about that even today, you know, about trauma that's happened to them in their youth, throughout their lives, that nobody really recognizes, because we just look at them as being, you know, well, they did this or they did that, and we just look at it from the surface, not really delving a little deeper into it.
I think we're
starting to look at those things.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Chief Crate. What do you think, Judge Kelly?
Well, at its most basic level, Laura, the purpose of sentencing is either punishment, deterrence, or rehabilitation, either or any one of those three things. The fact of the matter is, in my opinion, after 30 years of working in the circuit court, where 90% of the cases are filed in New Hampshire, so 9 out of 10 people who come into contact with the court come in through the circuit court, is that most people who come into the criminal justice system in the circuit court are basically law-abiding first offenders who have made a mistake or they've done something through an addiction or had some other issue that brought them into contact with the criminal justice system. The fact of the matter is that the arrest, the booking, the scheduling in court, the appearance in court is probably enough.
Very sobering experiences,
very sobering experience. And you probably don't need to do much more than that. So the issue, the larger issue is in a system that relies so heavily upon fines to take care of those three reasons for sentencing, is a fine really an appropriate sentence to accomplish any one of those three goals?
So what do you think?
I think that fines have huge limitations. When there's a mandatory fine, which is another issue altogether, a mandatory fine of $500, and somebody who is fully employed and has a little money in the bank gets sentenced to $500, it's not a problem. That person who's unemployed with children to support and is given the exact same fine because it's mandatory clearly is put in a much different situation. The impact is disproportionate often on those who can't afford to pay. And so, therefore, the punitive aspect ends up being much more prominent than the rehabilitative or the deterrent aspect.
Buzz, to you and then back to our listeners.
Broader perspective, there's three points that we're talking about here in the criminal justice system where the system's got to make decisions. One, it's when the police are deciding whether to arrest somebody, whether to charge somebody in conjunction with a prosecutor. And the issues that Chief Crate raised are substantial ones. At that point, you know, the role of money and how much it costs the system is a relatively unimportant factor. The second point is the sentencing phase. If a person pleads guilty, is found guilty, then it's up to the judge on the recommendation of the prosecutor and defense lawyer to provide a sentence. Those sentences may involve jail sentence, they may involve a fine, they may involve restitution. And that's a part of what Judge Kelly was talking about. And I think our system in the nation, not just in New Hampshire, we've come to over-rely on fines. And, you know, judges around the country said, oh, it's a simple assault, you get a $250 fine, when it one-size-fits-all fine practice, which I think Judge Kelly and I both agree is just not the way to do it. At that point, money matters. How much it will cost the system to implement the sentence, how much the person can afford. Third point is when a person is fined and has trouble paying the fine, what do we do then? And it's at that point, it's that third point that our report focuses on and really raises the issue of, you know, can this person pay it or not? Are we trying to get blood out of a stone? Or is this someone who is thumbing their nose at the court? And, you know, our basic idea is we're not discriminating well enough at that point.
Well, and that's a big question that I want to throw at everybody. But let's go back to our listeners for a moment. And Skip joins us from Stratford. Hi, Skip. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Just a quick question. When somebody commits an offense and then they go before a judge, are they given an alternative to a fine, such as community service? I think one of the other listeners alluded to it. But possibly community service, whether it be at a nursing home, a rest home, a food pantry, soup kitchen, something that they actually have to reconnect with society and not penalized. If you can't pay, you can't pay. I'll leave now and join the conversation.
Well, and Skip, thank you so much for calling in. And that's something we should definitely look at. It's something the report mentions. Judge Kelly, to you first. Okay, so blood from a stone, as Buzz Scher says, someone clearly has no ability to pay. On the other hand, they did do something. So what about community service?
Well, you know, the real issue is accountability, holding that person accountable and hoping to accomplish those three goals. And so honestly, in the mind of a judge, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a fine or community service. And there are some cases, whether the person is young or it's a first offender or they haven't got the money, where community service is absolutely the best thing to do. One of the problems in New Hampshire, and something that we as a state probably need to work on, is that the number of community service options are really limited in the state. It takes someone who is really going to work hard to develop those contacts in a community who are willing to take somebody in who has committed an offense. And oftentimes, unfortunately, people have a bias against doing that sort of thing. So the number of options available are not as great as they should be.
Well, give us an example, because, again, to those outside the system, we may have no idea what community service involves. Just give us a typical.
Yep. It really can be just about anything. Most communities have a Meals for Many type of program where the poor are fed once a week at a church environment and that sort of thing. People can work in those. People have volunteered in schools, depending upon their background. Sometimes there's a volunteer who might work with a local governmental agency, although we try to shy away from that so that you don't have people working with the departments that arrested them unless there's a real relationship there. But they work in senior citizen centers and things like that, things that are very close to the community. And the intention there is to hope that that gets that person a connection with their community so they understand that their offense really isn't just something that's very private, but it impacts everybody.
So as our caller said, that's a connection to the community.
Yes.
You use those words too, Judge Kelly. And Buzz and Chief Crate, I want to get you in too. But Judge Kelly, so I hear what you're saying. It sounds great. Wow, feeding the homeless or whatever. But you got to have somebody to think of the project, monitor the project, make sure the person gets to the project, make sure they do the work that they're supposed to do, count up the hours, make sure those hours are indeed done. Maybe there's background checks that need to be done. Maybe this is a person who shouldn't work with children, or maybe they have issues where they shouldn't work with certain groups. So it sounds great, but it also sounds very involved.
Well, this is a great example of this being New Hampshire. What our practice is in the courts and is established by court rule is that the individual is asked to give us the plan, again, as part of the accountability. You tell us, if you've asked for community service and we decide that's the good thing to do, you give us the plan. What do you plan to do? Come back here in 2 weeks and tell us where you're going to work, and then we'll tell you. We allow them to work it off at the rate of $10 an hour for the fine, and then provide to us certification, something signed from the place where you worked at the end of your time within X number of days.
So they have to come up with that
plan. They have to come up with the plan, which is also very difficult.
Go ahead, Buzz, and then Chief Crate.
Very quickly. I think, we at the ACLU started discussions with the court system in this way, but I think we need to formalize not a huge formal administrative system for managing community service, but we just need in every one of the 32 circuit courts, we need a more robust list in each of those courts of community service options. That's the work that needs to be done by all of the stakeholders in the system. The police chiefs, the court system, the public defender's office, everybody who's involved in the system needs to come together to create a list of the options better implemented, as Judge Kelly lays out, by putting a responsibility on the individual who seeks to do the community service.
Chief Crate, I'd love your thoughts, too, on community service versus fines and some of the intricacies of making sure community service is appropriate and useful.
Well, I think it is, in the majority of the cases, it is very useful, and we've done that in our community. We do it a lot with our juvenile offenders, but we do it with some of our adult offenders as well. And it does work. It gives back to the community and brings those people into it. I think that, I want to say Stratford County, although I'm not as familiar with that, but they do have a program down there, community corrections program that does do this. And I think we are working towards that in the state. There's a few other steps that need to go into place first. It is going to cost some money for, the different communities to get those up and running, and we're a ways away from it. But I do think that most courts and most people do have those available, but it's not something that's looked at all the time right off the bat as much as it probably should be for a number of reasons. But I think that is something that is beneficial to everybody. The community gets something out of it. It's a way for somebody to pay back their debt to society, if you will. And I think there's been some successes with it. There obviously have been some downsides to it in the past where somebody doesn't complete it or it becomes more of a burden to monitor it. But I have seen it personally work very well.
Here's an email that came in from Liz in Londonderry. She says, some other states send their overdue collections to private collection companies, thus introducing the profit motive and further hardships. Does New Hampshire? Is there any consideration of this tactic in the works? Thanks, Liz, for the email, Buzz.
Currently, no, in New Hampshire. Put aside restitution, which is a separate entity paying somebody back for that money, which they lost as a part of the commission of the crime. My understanding is in Vermont, when fines end up not being paid, in many of those cases, they're referred to a civil collection agency, and jail is not on the table there. There's upsides and downsides to that kind of approach.
Okay. Judge Kelly.
Just again, to put it into context, Laura, last fiscal year, the courts imposed about $14 million in fines in the circuit court. Of that $14 million, $13 million was collected by the courts. Again, that goes back to my point.
That's not too bad, actually.
It is not too bad, which is why we don't really use collection agencies right now. There's an expense to the state for the courts to have to do that work of keeping track of time payments and so forth. But it goes back to my point that I think most people are law-abiding. They're going to pay their fines, work to pay their fines. And we're talking about a small segment, small but important segment, in this program.
Liz, thank you for the email. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And let's take Sherry in Nashua. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I just heard the list of community service options, and I wondered if anywhere on that list there's the possibility for litter cleanup or anything like that?
There is a fair bit of litter along the highway sometimes. Thank you, Sherry, for calling in.
In some circumstances, that happens with inmates at county facilities. The real problem, to pick up on what Sherry said, is there isn't as formal and long a list, an actual explicit list of community service options. The issue really isn't, is community service a good idea or not? I think pretty much every circuit court judge thinks community service is a good idea in a good number of cases. The issue is there's not that many options. There's not a nice long list in every one of the 32 circuit courts.
And again, you need somebody to make sure that that person is indeed going down the river.
I think Judge Kelly really laid it out well. You say to the person, here is the list of community service options. Mm-hmm. Here's the contact information. Within X amount of time, come up with a plan as to which one you're going to do. Talk with them. And then when you've completed it, come back with the signed document saying you've completed it. So I think we overstate the administrative burden. At the upfront level, there is a need to get every circuit court to have a list of a lot of options that meets the variety of needs.
Yeah.
But it's easy to overstate what a burden it is.
What do you think, Chief Crate? Litter pickup, other options, and as Buzz Scher is saying, it doesn't need to be as difficult as perhaps I'm making it out to be.
I think each community has different pieces into it, but I think it's a great idea that they have that, set that up into play. But again, who's going to oversee it? Who's going to pay for it? How do we generate this list? Somebody's got to take that initiative to get those lists to the court. And we're already seeing, like we've talked about before, unlimited amount of resources available and getting stretched even more. I mean, I was just in a conversation last week where we were talking about fines and motor vehicle offenses. The number of tickets being written in our state is down considerably because the police officers see, when they write a ticket to somebody, how that's going to negatively affect them. So they're not writing as many tickets as they have in the past because of the burden onto, the individual. For the hoping that a warning will change that behavior. So again, it's how much, is that going to cost to implement, and do we get more out of it then?
All right, Sherry, thank you for the call. More of your thoughts in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour on The Exchange, the role of money in incarceration. We're looking at a new ACLU report that caused some waves last week. It's called Debtors' Prisons in New Hampshire. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour, Buzz Scher, professor at UNH Law, co-author of the report, Judge Edwin Kelly, administrative judge for New Hampshire's circuit court system, and Richard Crate, past president of New Hampshire's Association of Chiefs of Police and current chief in Enfield. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And before we go back to our listeners, Judge Kelly, to you, we've talked a lot about community service, how it might be done, and so forth. We've gotten some ideas from our listeners. But what about those folks who can't do community service? It would take them away from work. It would take them away from young children. But we've also determined that they can't pay the penalty. So what's the best option for dealing with that person who can't pay and has, you know, young children or a job and can't do community service?
Well, I think, you know, when we look at those cases, and it's probably, again, a very small subset of cases. When we look at those cases, I think it's up to the judge at that point to say, what is in it? What am I really trying to do with this person who can't afford to pay, maybe homebound for a lot of reasons? Is the process they've gone through to date enough? Is it enough of an impact on that person? Have we already accomplished either the punishment, the deterrence, or the rehabilitation, and then suspend the fines? And that's something that judges do on a fairly regular basis. When you see somebody who's really, they're working hard, but they just can't make it happen. They can't pay that fine, to just suspend it. And if they come back a second time, well, then you can talk about that. But I think very often that'll be the last time we'll see the person.
Really? So the first time you might just say, okay, you know what? You messed up, but we recognize the difficulties that you have financially and time-wise, but don't come back again. Or if I see you a third time or a fourth time, then I'm not going to be as lenient? I mean, is it that simple?
I think many times it can be that simple.
And I think,
Buzz?
You know, I think the broadest point here is that we want our judges to treat people individually, appreciate their circumstances. And there are going to be a few people who have a job, who have young kids and can't pay a fine. But the number of those people and who are in the criminal justice system, the number of those people who are really going to need a measure of significant punishment for a first-time offense, most likely, is vanishingly small. And we can't design our system, you know, it's a tail wagging the dog proposition. We can't design a system to make sure we punish those people. We need to look holistically at the individual, and I think that's what makes the most sense.
Well, and has been mentioned a couple times already, Stratford County does have a recognized program of community service. Joining us now on the line is Ray Bauer. He's county commissioner for Stratford County. And Ray Bauer, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. I'm actually the county administrator, but thank you very much.
County administrator, I apologize. So how is it set up in Stratford County? What is it that you are doing around community service that a lot of people say is working?
Well, we've been doing it for about 10 years now. We actually have employees. We run the program 7 days a week. We have employees whose sole function is to manage our community service program, and that's overseen by the superintendent of our House of Correction.
And what kind of community service projects are people doing?
Everything from painting schools, cemetery cleanup. We help move the elderly. We have a number of elderly housing complexes here in Stratford County. We do work for the cities and towns. Roadside cleanup was mentioned earlier. We certainly do that. We've painted the Dover Fire Department. We cut wood. We do food distribution to the elderly. And we actually even shovel snow. We kind of lead the Meals on Wheels program by shoveling snow to people whose meals are going to be delivered to make sure they have access to the Meals on Wheels program.
Well,
as some examples, that's not everything.
That's a lot, and I'm sure shoveling snow last winter was deeply appreciated. You said you've been doing this for 10 years. What have you learned over the past 10 years with this?
I think we have to just take a step backwards and remember why we did it. First of all, we find it to be a financial equalizer. those people that can pay fines, that's wonderful. Those people that can't deserve some kind of access or some kind of ability to stay out of jail. And it's also a way for us, it started as a way for us to help manage our inmate population. It's senseless to have people spending short times in jail. There's no opportunity for rehabilitation in terms of having them access to our rehabilitation programs. And they're just taking up space. Plus, they're costing the taxpayer all the way through. So it was a cost to apprehend, a cost to adjudicate, and now a cost to incarcerate because they didn't pay their fines. That just didn't seem to make any financial sense to us whatsoever. So we began this program, and it for us, it provided options for the court at the beginning. We said, hey, Your Honor, this is an opportunity to try something different instead of simply using the House of Correction to incarcerate. And that seemed to have worked out pretty well for us.
So besides financial concerns, you know, this person clearly can't pay. Let's say somebody could pay, but it's going to be kind of a hardship. They really don't want to. How much flexibility do folks have to say, could I please have this community service option?
That and the initial part of that is between that person and the judge. But, you know, we welcome everyone. We can manage to find some community service for everyone to do. Whether it be a physical inability to do traditional community service, we can frequently find opportunities for them to read to one of the elderly at our nursing home. Again, criminal record taken into consideration. And so we can pretty much find something for everybody to do. We really haven't had a problem where we've had to turn anyone away in the last 10 years.
Wow. Well, it's interesting. So what would you say to other counties, Ray, who might think, yeah, this sounds good, but I'm not sure if I'm ready to jump in with both feet?
Well, I understand that. You know, there's some things that we do in Stratford County that, you know, probably would surprise the general public if they were well aware of everything we do in terms of managing our inmate population. But for us, it's been worthwhile. It's provided the court some really good opportunities. When I saw the AP story in, which, by the way, Stratford County agrees with 100%, this was always one of the other reasons why we did it, that we didn't want the court to have these hearings. And in a lot of times, particularly in the old days, we weren't sure these hearings were ever done. While that's not our responsibility in a criminal justice system, we wanted to be able to provide the court options. As an example, quickly we did some statistics for so far in 2013. I'm sorry, in 2015. We had 171 people who worked off fees and fines for providing a total of 640 work days. We had 8 people who served a total of 35 days in jail. So the statistics are really favorable.
So it's a way to reduce your jail population.
Sure. I suspect those 8 people also were people that failed in the offer to do community service. So the court offered the community service, and for one reason or another, despite extensions and other things, they refuse to exercise that option.
Well, Ray Bauer, this has been really interesting. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
That's Ray Bauer, County Administrator for Stratford County, where, as we heard, they have some innovative approaches toward community service. And Buscher, Judge Kelly, Chief Crate, let's go right back to our listeners. Sarah joins us from Epping. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Two brief points. I think this is an important program, one, because there are people who are not informed that there might be other options as opposed to paying their fine who are paying it because they don't realize that. In college, I had a parking ticket I couldn't afford to pay, and when I called the police station, they told me I was going to go to jail and there was no other option. And when I cried, they laughed at me, and I ended up paying the fine to avoid going to jail, and I didn't get to eat for a week. And then on the other point, I recently helped my brother graduate high school, and he had a community service component. And even with no offenses as sort of a quote-unquote clean citizen, it was almost impossible to find him community service.
Really? Now, what part of the state, Sarah, is your brother?
My brother is graduating from Bow High School, and he had come to live with me in Epping just at the end of graduation.
Okay, so two thoughts there. And let's pick up on the first one. Chief Crate, to you. Now, obviously, you weren't there, so you can't judge Sarah's case. But what about that? You do hear other stories of people saying, you know, pay the fine or you're going to jail.
Well, I think that, from the police side of things, that's something that I haven't seen us really take that approach. I have seen judges, you know, because again, they're trying to get the fine paid, get across that, the individual has not done what they need to do. So the judge will say, you know, you need to pay this fine or you may be going to jail. Now, whether or not that person, you know, the judge takes that action, I haven't seen that happen, you know, in my career, unless the person really, you know, they just tell the judge, I'm not paying the fine, they refuse, and leave the judge no other choice. And then it's, you know, then they do end up being incarcerated. But that's the, you know, the defendant's choice, not so much the judge ordering that. But, you know, I've seen where when it really comes down to it, what they do is they follow the law and the process, you know, that I think is in place for, you know, the person doing that. We've all heard, you know, those stories, like what the caller describes. And I think that's where, you know, in New Hampshire, I'd like to think that most of our police officers, the majority of our police officers, are not going to do that. They look at how do we get this taken care of, you know, parking tickets or something that some communities, you know, do take very seriously. They make a lot of revenue for their town, and they, you know, they have to make sure that people are paying their fines in those instances. But those are more of a civil thing that have to go through a few more steps before they get into court.
Go ahead, Buzz, and jump in.
A couple things. One, I think part of what needs to happen, and certainly we at the ACLU and the court system have begun to talk about this, is education. You know, a judicial education so they understand what the limits are. And education of police officers so they, you know, they're not making threats, idle threats like that. I think that's an important part of it. One thing to go back to Ray Bauer just very briefly. I think one of the interesting things about that program is it, in certain circumstances, functions at the front end of the system. It's a diversion program, so they don't even get into the court system in any significant formal way that costs the system money, that they have an opportunity for community service before they have a trial. And if they successfully complete it, you know, their case is disposed of differently. So I think one of the ways to additionally save money for the court system as well as the county is through these kind of upfront diversion community service programs.
Yeah. Judge Kelly, go ahead. I love your thoughts on Sarah's call.
Yeah, I agree with Buzz completely about the local nature of parking enforcement, for example. But typically what happens, and Sarah mentioned that she wasn't told about community service, but typically what happens is that the court will tell people that the fine is owed that day, and if people are unable to pay it, then they'll work with them to set up a time payment. And if that doesn't work out after a second hearing, perhaps, then the other options are discussed. So at first, people are told this is the sentence, this is what you have to do to give people a chance to gather the money and so forth. So there's sort of a stepped process in dealing with these things.
Well, and here's a tweet that came in from Allie, who says many fines have a tax on top that helps pay for state police and state police training and government. Allie says she's curious what role that aspect has in this debate. Buzz?
I don't think in and of itself it has a particularly significant role. It's just more money. But I don't think that's the determining factor on whether somebody goes to jail or not. It's a percentage of the overall fine. So while it exists and it's a revenue source, I don't think what drives the judicial behavior that we've seen in certain circumstances is a collection of revenue issue.
Yeah. Do you want to jump in, Judge Kelly?
Yeah, very quickly. It is important, though, to consider in the overall scheme of things, if you accept that most people, and I do think that most people who come into contact with the criminal justice system tend to be people that we might describe as poor or less economically advantaged than others. If you think of our structure of sentencing in the circuit court, which has to be by nature fines, and you add that tax that Ali referred to, it's a 24% addition in every case. Every time we impose a fine, 24% is added to it, and that's used to fund some very worthwhile programs, but used to fund those programs just the same instead of having the state through its general fund do it. That is having a disproportionate impact on people who simply can't afford it. If you can't afford the fine to begin with, add 24%. It's 24% harder.
You can't afford the fine,
right,
and the tax,
right,
on top of it. So just to wrap up with all of you, and Chief Crate, what's one change that you think would be workable for you and your officers in terms of this, you know, people did do something wrong, they do need to pay a fine, but they just can't. They don't have the ability. What's one change that you would make if you could?
Well, I think putting in the community program like what Stratford County is doing, and I think we're working towards that. You know, it's a ways off for the other counties, but I think that program is a model for us to follow, to look at, and I think that has some success that they've seen down there, and I think that is something that we can do around the state.
Okay. Chief Crate, thank you very much. You've been generous with your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Richard Crate, past president of the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police, current chief in Enfield. How about you, Judge Kelly? I know you and Buzz Scher and the ACLU were talking about possible changes.
Well, there are things that we are absolutely going to achieve in our conversations with the ACLU in terms of making sure, again, that not even one person, if we can avoid it, goes to jail without all the constitutional protections to which they're entitled. And I feel confident that we will do the best we can, recognizing that this is a human system and there will always be errors. And thankfully, we have an appellate system, and the appellate system on this issue is a very speedy one, and those errors can be corrected. But our goal is to get to a place where it's manageable. The next most important thing, though, is I think really what Ray Bauer was talking about is the exercise of real leadership in the community. Stratford County came forward. They developed a program. They took the leadership role. I think what we need to do is to develop that community service option, but be looking for leaders both within the system and outside of the system, primarily in communities. And I think our courts, there are 32 of them. There's no town located more than 30 miles away from a circuit court. We're in a good position to work with public defenders and defense lawyers in general to try to get communities to become involved. So I think that would be a great improvement.
Okay. And Judge Kelly, thank you. Last word from you, Buzz Scher, real quick.
Short-term accountability so that judges cannot do what they've been doing in an unconstitutional fashion. Part two, education throughout the system so that we understand fines are not the answer to everything.
Okay. All of you, thank you very much for being here. Really appreciate it. This is The Exchange on NHPR.